Chapter 3. The narrow chamber atop the navigational pilaster could barely hold all four of the navigators. What the Primarch had asked for required a very specific set of circumstances. Fiana and her fellow navigators each surveyed a stretch of the warp, seeking the conjunction of flows needed to bring the Invincible Reason quickly back towards the Phantom ship. All other preparations had been made. The ship's company were braced for the potentially devastating drop back into real space, while Fiana had warned her companions of the deleterious effect it could have on their minds.
"I have something," said Ardal Aeneas, Fiana's younger brother, "a counter-nebulous promontory on the port bow."
Fiana directed her unnatural gaze in the direction Aeneas had mentioned and saw what had caught his attention. Three warp streams, one very strong, the other two weaker, but approaching each other at steep angles, came together to create a three-dimensional whirlpool. The outflow curved back over the battle barge's path and intersected with a dead pool that slowly leached back into the Nairn flow.
"Captain Steenius, please direct primary navigational control to my console."
The communications pickup buzzed in Fiana's shaking hand, and she resolutely avoided the concerned looks in the eyes of her fellow navigators. She received the affirmative from Steenius, and a few seconds later, the screen below her left arm flickered into life. A diagnostic subroutine scrolled quickly across the pale green glass, and then the screen went blank. Fiana's voice dropped to a whisper as she keyed in the maneuver required to plunge the ship into the heart of the promontory.
"Remember the pride of House Naeocene."
There was no sound in the warp. No real tidal pressures or inertia pulled at metal and ferrocrete, but even so, Fiana could sense the tortured mass of the Invincible Reason as its geller field realigned, shoving the battle barge from one streaming eddy of warp energy into another. Fiana felt a moment of sickness as her other sense lurched and spun, while all around her the clashing currents of the psychic promontory smashed together like the slavering jaws of an immense immaterial beast. Kierfan, youngest of her siblings, fell to his knees beside the chief navigator, emptying the contents of his stomach upon the floor between snarled gasps of pain. Fiana ignored the distraction and keyed in another instruction on her rune pad. The ship settled into a trough of psychic power for several seconds before rising up, ejected from the promontory like a grain of sand caught in the spume of a breaching whale. Fiana gritted her teeth and made a final adjustment to their course, forcing herself to peer along the unwinding threads of energy that unraveled before her. She anchored the geller field onto the strongest, and then pushed aside her companions to collapse into the only chair in the chamber.
"Captain, we are on our new heading," she gasped over the comm.
Steadying herself, she looked for the bobbing mote of energy that was the other ship's warp signature. She located it ahead, approaching quickly. There was no time to waste. Even from their prepared idling state, it would take several minutes for the warp engines to charge to full power. Any longer, and they would be right on top of the Phantom ship, their geller fields merging. The effect of translating in such close proximity to another vessel would be certain destruction for both ships.
"Translate now, Captain. Activate the warp engines."
Trying to emulate the example set by his Primarch, Corswain stood immobile on the gallery above the Invincible Reason Strategium, just behind and to the left of the statuesque lion. On the other side of the Primarch was Brother Redemptor Nemuel. The chaplain wore a skull-faced helm so that nothing could be seen of his expression, concerned or otherwise. Lady Fiana's snarled command had not helped settle Corswain's mood and had set the command crew below into frenetic activity. The navigation aides moved quickly from station to station in the bright glow of their screens, monitoring power outputs and safety thresholds as the plasma reactors of the battle barge went up above 100% output in preparation for the warp engine activation. Corswain clenched his jaw as he felt an ill-defined pressure building in his skull. It was not like a concussive shockwave or the pull felt in a plunging drop pod, but more like a container slowly being filled, reaching its capacity and yet not bursting. The ache was behind his eyes, mental, not physical. Aside from the brain-juddering dislocation of teleportation, it was the most unpleasant sensation he had ever encountered in his long years of service to the Legion. A glance at the lion
confirmed that if the Primarch suffered the same discomforts as his little brothers, he showed no outward sign of it. The commander of the First Legion stood with his legs braced apart, arms folded across his breastplate, eyes fixed on the multiple screens that made up the Strategium's main display wall. The aides working below acted and interacted like organic parts of a complex machine, the hub of which was Captain Stenius in the command throne. Inquiry and reply, report and command, all flowed through the ship's captain, who orchestrated the whole endeavour with curt responses and clipped orders. Corswain could only imagine the thoughts occupying Stenius at the moment. Warp translation was difficult enough in perfect conditions, and the current conditions were far from perfect. Another glance at the lion showed Corswain that the Primarch's attention had moved from the grey blankness of the screens to Stenius. It was impossible to discern real meaning from the Primarch's inscrutable glare, but that did not stop Corswain from speculating, occupying his mind with such idle thoughts, in order to distract himself from the coming moment when reality and unreality would clash, and they might all be wiped from existence. The lion's comments regarding Stenius concerned Corswain on two levels. At first hand, he wondered what he had missed that had been seen by the Primarch's insight. Corswain was, for the moment at least, until they were reunited with Luther and the rest of the Legion on Caliban, the right hand of the Primarch. It was his duty to foresee his master's commands and act before they required the lion's attention. If there was some facet of Stenius's manner that he had missed, Corswain felt he was not properly fulfilling his duties. Contrary to this was the worry that there was nothing amiss in Stenius's behaviour, which did not bode well for the lion's current state of mind. Since Sir Gwalza, the Primarch had brooded, even more than Corswain had been accustomed to. His master had said nothing of what preoccupied his thoughts, speaking only of the ongoing campaign against the Night Lords. But even those conversations had been touched by a new determination, bordering on a hunger for victory that Corswain had not seen in the lion since the earliest days of the Crusade. The Seneschal's brush with death had forced Corswain to acknowledge his own shortcomings and apply himself to his duties with greater endeavour. Perhaps the Primarch felt the same.
Warp translation in 10 seconds.
Stenius's monotone declaration cut through Corswain's meandering thoughts. He balled his hands into fists, knowing what was to come. The lion stepped forwards, gripping the balcony rail in both hands as he stared down at Stenius, eyes narrowed. The Primarch opened his mouth a little, as if he was about to speak. He said nothing, and shook his head slightly, lips pursed.
Beginning translation to real space.
This was the part Corswain hated the most, in sensation most alike to the disembodied lurch of teleportation. For an endless moment, the invincible reason was held between two dimensions, perched on the precipice between the material and immaterial, like a wanderer standing at the crossroads of fate. A moment before, it had been adrift on the tides of the warp, cocooned within a bubble of reality kept intact by its Geller field. Now, it was in the true universe, plucked from the unnatural currents, its Geller-born reality imploding as real space engulfed the vessel. Corswain's head reeled for several seconds, dizzied by a sense of unreality, his surroundings seeming out of step with him, disjointed and fragile. The sensation passed, leaving a faint pulsing behind Corswain's eyes. The lion was already barking orders for the short-range scanners to be brought online, eager to see whether his plan had worked and the phantom ship had been dragged out of the warp by the risky manoeuvre.
"All power to local augurs and broadband orspec sweeps," said the Primarch, striding towards the long sweep of stairs that led down into the main chamber of the Strategium. "Redirect long-range signalling and sensors to comnet scans. Find me that ship."
The systems of the Invincible Reason scoured the surrounding space for 7 minutes. Corswain and Nemiel had followed their Primarch down to the main floor and had been joined by Captain Stenius, who had surrendered his position of direct command to the lion. Nothing was said for those 7 minutes as the scanner technicians worked feverishly to determine whether the plan had succeeded.
"Legionis Astartes ident contact, my liege," announced one of the Strategium attendants. 22,000 kilometres from starboard bow. Eclipse class light cruiser. Night Lords. Broadcasting as the Avenging Shadow." Monitoring warp field fluctuations, my liege, said another. Transferring to main display.
The largest of the Strategium's screens blurred into life, filled with an expanse of stars. In the bottom right corner, a shifting corona of light silhouetted the enemy light cruiser, trapped in a vortex between real space and the warp.
Hard starboard 30 degrees, downplane 12 degrees, snapped the Lion,
having made the navigational calculations in only a couple of seconds. Even with the aid of a trigonometric cogitator, Stenius would have taken at least 2 minutes to get the exact heading required.
Ready torpedoes. Tubes 3 and 4. Flight crews to Thunderhawks and Stormbirds.
The Primarch's orders rang across the Strategium, setting teams of officers and functionaries into motion. As this new activity settled, the Lion crossed the floor to the weapons control consoles. Stenius took a step after him.
My liege, a full torpedo salvo will have a much greater chance of destroying the enemy.
I do not wish to destroy them, Captain. We will capture the ship and seize whatever technology they have employed to track us here. I am inputting the torpedo guidance codes. They will not miss.
Of course not, my liege, said Stenius, stepping back,
only the tone of his voice betraying his chagrin.
I request permission to lead the boarding parties, my liege, said Corswain.
Denied, little brother.
The Primarch did not look up, his fingers dancing across the rune keys of the main weapons console.
We will cripple their ship, and I will lead the attack myself.
I do not think that is a good idea, my liege, said Corswain,
daring his master's displeasure.
The warp interference surrounding the enemy vessel is highly unstable. The ship could be dragged back into the warp while you are aboard.
The Lion's fingers stopped their tapping for a moment, and the Primarch straightened. Corswain prepared himself for a rebuke.
Denied, little brother, said the Lion, resuming his work. I will need you to remain on board the Invincible Reason.
Corswain automatically glanced at Stenius, guessing his Primarch's intent. The Lion's distrust remained.
Brother Redemptor
is not a command-level officer, little brother.
The Lion's words were curt but not harsh. He finished his task and turned towards Corswain, deep green eyes boring into the Seneschal's skull.
You will remain on board, Cor, unless you have any other reason why that should not be the case.
Torpedoes bearing on target, my liege,
declared a weapons tech, stilling any reply that Corswain might utter. He had none.
Firing solution has been plotted as per your calculations.
Launch when at optimum angle, said the Lion. Engines all ahead full, towards the enemy.
Aye, my liege, replied Stenius.
He activated the internal communication system and repeated the order to the tech marines, manning the reactor chambers.
Tube 3 cycling, Tube 3 launching, Tube 4 cycling, Tube 4 launching.
The words were spat mechanically from the mouth grill of a half-human servitor enmeshed by a tangle of wires to the weapons bank. The haggard figure was little more than a torso and head protruding from a cylindrical console, his eyes stapled shut, ears replaced by antenna-jutting vocal receivers. On the main screen, the beleaguered Night Lord's ship was dead ahead, the streak of the two torpedoes racing from the battle barge towards it.
23 seconds to torpedo separation. 27 seconds to impact,
grated the weapons servitor. Already, the blazing plasma drives of the torpedoes were just another glimmering pair of stars against the backdrop of the galaxy, gradually dwindling with distance.
My liege, I have Lady Fiana requesting contact on the internal comm, said an aide.
Direct through speakers,
replied the Lion, long strides taking him back across the Strategium to stand beside the command throne.
The Night Lord's ship is doing something strange with its warp engines, the navigator reported over the internal address system.
Corswain saw his Primarch frown at her imprecise language.
Be more specific, Lady Fiana, said the Lion. What can you see?
Forgive my vagueness, Lorded Primarch. It is hard to describe to one possessed of normal sight alone. There is something, some things, moving in the Geller field around the enemy ship. It looks like fragments of warp space are actually inside the ship. But that is impossible.
I have heard the word too often lately,
snarled the Primarch.
What is the significance of this to us?
Before Fiana could reply, the lion's attention was drawn elsewhere.
My liege, the enemy ship is turning, trying to break free from the warp breach. They are closing quickly with our position.
Detecting an incoming hail, my liege.
The two reports came almost at the same moment, and the lion hesitated for the first time since coming to the Strategium, unsure which piece of information to respond to first. The pause only lasted a fraction of a heartbeat before the decision was made.
Adjust course by 2 points support and ready starboard batteries, ordered the Primarch. Decrypt hail and transfer to main speakers.
The air was filled with static hiss for several seconds while the automated decryption systems deciphered the incoming transmission. What came out of the speakers sounded like the garbled hissing of a snake. Every syllable spat with derision. The lion's face twisted in a lopsided smile, and he looked at Corswain.
I never cared much for Nostraman Cor. You have studied it, I know. Tell me, what do they say? I cannot imagine that they're begging for mercy.
They praise you for the trick in dragging them into the light, but then there come the obtuse threats. They say that they will have a reckoning in Slathesin, and we will all meet our doom.
I do not recall any system called Slathesin in Thramas or elsewhere, said the lion.
It is a reference to their barbaric past, my liege, explained Corswain. It is the lowest hell, where the souls of the fallen exact vengeance on those that wrong them, reserved for traitors, patricides, and worse.
There is no such place. Their threats are empty, said Nemuel, speaking for the first time since he had arrived at the Strategium.
He looked at Corswain through the lenses of his skull-shaped helm, his expression hidden.
There is no hell, and there are no such things as souls.
A few seconds later, laughter sounded over the transmission, edged with insanity.
You are wrong, son of Caliban, so wrong. You will find out very soon. Slathesin opens its gates for you all.
I gave no order to transmit, said the lion. Cut the feed, now.
We have ears nonetheless, proud lion.
We are not transmitting any signal, confirmed one of the communications attendants.
My blade waits for your throat, disbeliever. I am Nias Corvali, and at the last midnight I will have a bloody revenge.
There was a shout from one of the technicians monitoring the scanning arrays, just a few seconds before an automated siren blared across the Strategium.
The enemy ship is activating its void shields and warp engines, my liege, came the panicked cry.
Madness, muttered Nemuel. The feedback from the void shield will tear them apart.
Fire arresters! Full turn to port!
Snarled the lion.
That same feedback will create a wave in the warp breach, ripping it apart. Activate Geller fields. Prepare for unplanned translation.
Torpedo separating!
The servitor's monotone declaration cut through the activity, and Corswain looked up at the main screen, as did the lion, Stenius, and several others. There was a brief twinkling as thrusters fired and the torpedoes ejected their multiple warheads towards the Night Lord's ship. As if in response, the multicoloured bruise on reality that surrounded the target vessel shimmered violently, waves of kaleidoscopic energy pouring from the warp breach in iridescent flares. The light cruiser appeared to fold in upon itself, the implosion releasing another blast of warp power as its void shields tried to shunt raw psychic energy back into the warp itself, creating a loop that fed into the breach between universes. One moment Corswain was looking at the enemy vessel in the heart of an ever-moving circular rainbow, the next, the whole screen was filled with rippling lines and coils of pulsing warp energy. And then he realized that the convocation of energy was not on the screen, but in the air around him.